The Ferry Malaspina will be out of service longer than expected. And the Haines Area Moose Survey is delayed due to lack of snowfall. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Abby Collins. Those stories and more are up next. The state ferry Malaspina will return to service about a month later than expected. That will affect 9 southeast port communities. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The 450-passenger ship was supposed to come out of a scheduled overhaul at Ketchikan's Vigor Marine Dry Dock March 31st. Instead, it will resume sailing April 28th. It usually travels a route between Prince Rupert, British Columbia, and Haines, with 7 other port calls along the way. Alaska Marine Highway spokeswoman Ora Landau says no other ships are available to fill in.
The Malaspina is the community boat for Southeast Alaska. You know, it gets into smaller ports that the mainliners can't get into, and impacts the Malaspina, we understand, are significant for passengers and communities.
The ferries Columbia and Lacandy will sail to and from those ports as scheduled, but service will be less frequent without the Malaspina. The delay is due to a scheduling problem, not the need for additional repairs. A barge used as a floating cruise ship berth in Ketchikan will be in the Vigor Marine dry dock longer than expected. City Ports and Harbors Director Steve Corporon says it's being overhauled.
It's in dry dock for routine maintenance to clean it, recoat it, and put new zincs on it. And being Southeast Alaska, whenever you're trying to essentially paint something this time of year, sometimes it can take a little longer to get it done than you would hope.
The berth and its supporting structures were struck by a cruise ship in 2016, but Corporon says most of those repairs have already been completed. Landau says the Malaspina work is routine, part of the Marine Highway System's regular maintenance plan.
The Malaspina in overhaul is going to get painted on its underside. The propeller hubs will be reconditioned, and there'll be some steel inserts on the car deck to replace wasted steel, and then they'll go through its normal annual inspections.
In addition to Prince Rupert and Haines, the Malaspina stops at Juneau, Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, Cake, Hoonah, and Sitka. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
A wildlife survey that happens annually in the Haines area hasn't taken place this year, at least not yet. Lack of snowfall in the Chilkat Valley is preventing the Alaska Department of Fish and Game from conducting an aerial moose survey. Biologist Carl Koch estimates about half a dozen times the department hasn't been able to complete the survey. He's hopeful there will eventually be enough snow to do the research this year. But Koch says it's not ideal to survey later in the season. Antlers have dropped, so they can't calculate a bull-to-cow ratio. It's also not possible to survey antler configurations or develop a cow-to-calf ratio. What they can still get is a minimum moose count and calculate the percent of calves out of that total. When the survey was conducted in 2016, biologists counted the highest number of moose in the last 10 years. In 2014 and 2015, weather also pushed surveys until later in the season. Earlier this month, the Canadian company Constantine Metal Resources announced the appointment of a new vice president of advanced projects. That includes the Palmer Project, mineral exploration in the Chilkat Valley. Here's a check-in with Constantine about transitioning further into advanced exploration and what's to come. Constantine is trying to figure out whether a mine is feasible in Haines Upper Valley. Exploration of the potential hard rock mine is known as the Palmer Project.
I mean, the question everyone has is this going to be a mine?
That's Constantine's Liz Cornejo.
And we're trying to answer that question of how we would do it, and can we do it to meet all the environmental regulations and what's expected of us to do it responsibly, and can we do it in a manner that's going to be safe and efficient and also economic for everyone.
Moving from early stage to advanced exploration means...
is really the transition from have you found something significant and is it worth evaluating for feasibility? Is it economic? Can you permit it? Is it mineable? Is it doable? What are the economics going to be around it? But also, how will it be done? When can it be done? There's a lot of information to collect to get there.
Cornejo says there's still a lot of work to be done before saying it definitely makes sense to move forward with a mine plan. She says it could be several years still.
We're at the stage where, yeah, we found a nice deposit. that's got some high grades, but we haven't done the real in-depth technical studies that are needed to do the first stage, the early stage economic analysis, which the first stage in that is called the preliminary economic assessment. And then before you would ever go to mining, then you would go to a pre-feasibility study and a feasibility study. And each of those steps requires a lot of information that's more and more detailed.
There are a lot of strong feelings about the Palmer Project in Haines. Many residents are concerned about the impact of a mine on the Chilkat watershed and its salmon populations. In 2016, the Chilkat Indian Village of Klukwan nominated the Chilkat River for Tier 3 high-level environmental protection. That's still pending with the state. And last year, Klukwan and several conservation organizations sued the Bureau of Land Management over permitting for expanded exploration at the Palmer Project. But others in the community are excited about the economic possibilities of a mine. Right now, Cornejo says Constantine is continuing to explore, to expand its current deposit and discover new ones.
And of course, it always depends on exploration success, because we could drill more drill holes and not find anything more. And at that point, you know, we would pull back on exploration expenditures. But at this point, we're very confident that there is additional mineralization to be found.
Cornejo calls 2017 a, quote, great year for the Palmer Project.
You know, we made some discoveries. We found some new mineralization in a couple areas, really high-quality stuff. And I also got a lot of new environmental data. We had some good conversations with everyone. And so we're really excited about the project and the team that we've really put together, too.
She says this new appointment will help move the project to the, quote, next level. In Haines, I'm Abby Collins. Juneau is unlikely to be significantly affected by a marine tsunami, like what could have been generated by last month's earthquake in the Gulf of Alaska. Juneau is located far enough inland that it's largely protected by the various islands of the Inside Passage. But what about an inland or alpine tsunami? KTOO's Matt Miller reports.
The interesting thing I found out, the city of Geneva in Switzerland is at its present location because the original city was wiped out by a tsunami back in the Middle Ages.
Now, some context here. Geneva is a city at 1,200-foot elevation that's largely surrounded by the Swiss Alps. And the person with that little historical tidbit was Rick Edwards, an aquatic ecologist at the Forest Service's Pacific Northwest Research Station in Juneau. Juneau residents probably didn't realize it, but there was an alpine tsunami that occurred nearby just over a year ago. Edwards says on December 30th, 2016, they detected a magnitude 3.4 seismic event at the head of Cowie Creek. That's north of Juneau near the end of the road. But it wasn't an earthquake. A gigantic piece of rock broke away from the cliff and plunged into a small lake at the terminus of an unnamed glacier.
The volume of the rock fall was 709,000 cubic yards. Think of the federal building. That's equivalent to the volume of 5.3 federal buildings. So imagine five of the federal buildings made out of a rock very much like granite, falling about 1,000 feet into a lake.
And just in case you've never visited Juneau, the 10-story federal building is one of the largest buildings in downtown. Edwards says such a huge rock fall is actually very, very tiny on the scale of normal geologic events. An estimated 600,000 cubic yards of water was blown out of the lake. A 30-foot-high wave rolled down Cowie Creek, downing trees and scouring the shoreline in a 300-foot-wide swath down the valley. Edwards says they have a hydrograph on the highway bridge about 8 miles downstream from the lake. It recorded a 6-foot-high wave pulse about 30 minutes after the rockfall.
So by the time I got to the bridge, it was not 30 feet high, but it was still an impressive. If you'd been there looking, you would have known that something happened.
Edwards also says such rockfall-induced tsunamis are very rare compared to the more common events generated by landslides. Edwards says they have good data about the tsunami because it occurred in the Hiin Latini Experimental Forest. LIDAR, or light detection and ranging surveys, before and after the tsunami show 1,500 trees were washed away by the wave. Edwards is sure that incubating salmon eggs were obliterated in the immediate area of the rockfall, but further downstream,
The net result of this is more sediment and more pools and more salmon habitat. So these cataclysmic events are not just compatible with salmon populations, but they're absolutely essential to maintain good quality habitat.
Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
For KHNS News, I'm Abby Collins. Thanks for joining us tonight. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.